Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello again, listeners. Welcome to another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. For joining me this week to help, talk through quite a lot of that's happened, actually, is Anita, all the way from Croatia. How are you, my dear?
Hello. I'm doing great, even though it's Monday. It's autumn, rainy in Croatia, but yeah, it's been okay. Much better than you.
Yeah, well, I mean, the weather's not so bad here, although it suddenly turned really cold all of a sudden. But yes, apologies in advance, listeners. I've had a tooth taken out in the last few days, and so my mouth is a bit weird. So if you get any strange noises coming, then I apologise for it. But hopefully we should be all right. He says, not entirely convincingly. Now, obviously, we didn't do a full podcast last week. Stephen stepped in and did a little kind of roundup of the Leicester City game as the week went on. So we may touch on that again. But even without that, there's been quite a lot's happened in the last week or so. I mean, where would you like to start, Anita?
Yeah, I think that Stephen didn't talk about the Sporting match he recorded before that, so perhaps could start with that one, although it wasn't much to talk about there.
Well, I mean, hey, it keeps us top of the group, and if we manage to beat them at the Emirates in the return fixture, then we will have already won the group, and then we can probably see lots of rotation and kids get a look in for the home tie against Karabag or the away trip to Vorskla, which would be good, given that there are difficult fixtures coming up in domestic competition.
It's definitely job done kind of match.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, what was your thoughts going into the match? Because obviously we'd been ever so kindly treated to a Monday night kickoff just before a fucking Europa League away game. Thanks for that.
Yeah, that was really odd. I mean, we had now 3 matches in 7 days. It's really hard and awful when they could have easily put the Leicester match on Sunday. I think there was only 1 match on Sunday, and they moved ours to Monday. Just really silly move, but totally unsurprising when it comes to TV and football and everything around that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's also a consequence of being one of the clubs that's big enough to get big ratings. You know, yeah. I mean, if you're not too many nights are going to be sort of, you know, Cardiff against Huddersfield. No offense to either of those teams, and you know, and they're given their financial resources, they're probably punching above their weight even to be anywhere near the Premier League. But ultimately, they're not going to be as much of a ratings winner for Sky as Arsenal or Chelsea or United or Liverpool or City or, dare I say it, even Spurs. I mean, obviously, we sort of came into the Sporting match very optimistic with the good win against Leicester City. Again, repeating the tactic of only really playing well in the second half. And it was a bit like that in Lisbon, wasn't it?
Yeah, especially the first half was really, really nothing happened. It was really a boring match, hard to watch, and as you said, it's a theme so far this season to just kind of skip over the first half and then start playing in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, it wasn't just that, but I was very confident when, you know, once it was 0-0 at half-time, I thought we'd win the game.
Yeah.
Despite the... I mean, it helped that we had a referee that was, shall we say, better at dealing with the pressure applied by Portuguese players than in our previous... Arsenal's previous experiences. I mean, I remember that.
They were really, really annoying with everything. Just reminded me why I really dislike the Portuguese national team.
Well, it's funny because the Portuguese national team is actually sort of, because so many of them play in other countries, is actually a little more robust, shall we say. But yeah, I was briefly getting reminded of that the game in the Champions League. I think Arsenal lost to Braga away, where the match officials gave us absolutely nothing. Including the most cast iron penalty on Carlos Vela you will ever see, where the bloke basically got kicked into the sky and somehow the ref didn't manage to not give a penalty.
Well, it was the Slovenian ref Skomina in Lisbon, and he's, I'd say, easily perhaps top three European referees over the last few years, so no surprise there, actually.
Yeah, he's, he, I mean, whether you agree with all his decisions, he's certainly someone that doesn't take any shit, which is what was needed under the circumstances. I mean, obviously, we had the goal disallowed before the goal, so he wasn't exactly doing us unnecessary favours either. I mean, what did you
think? Yeah, I think it was a little bit soft.
Yeah, I mean,
some referees would give it, definitely.
I think the defender fell over, but fell over in a position that made it manage to look like, at first glance, that he'd been pushed, but actually he just stumbled over trying to initiate contact himself, kind of going backwards.
I mean, if Danny Welbeck pushes you and he doesn't fall down, so it's a bit overreacting.
Yeah Well, it's also just the fact that, you know, Welbeck might well have been intending to lever him out the way but didn't have to. But it was a great header from Welbeck, and obviously we saw a confident and efficient finish for him for the actual goal.
Yeah, just really nice to see him scoring from a real proper chance, not with his unusual body part or some kind of accident or by luck. It was just really a good goal. Again, a team goal starting from, I think it was a throw-in that started the move, and lots of passes once again, as they want to love to call it, the Emery ball.
And with
a little help from the defender from Sporting. Yeah.
Coates, who managed to show exactly why he was exposed playing in a back four at Liverpool when he was briefly part of the Premier League. Because he hasn't got the pace to play as in a back four in a physically intense league. But it's interesting to see that after a couple of years of Welbeck attempting to score sort of slightly accidental goals or sitters, he's gone back to scoring proper goals this season.
Yeah, and quite often.
I think that's five for the season for him in all competitions now.
I think so too.
I mean, when do we need to start starting the new contract for Welbeck petition?
Yeah, no one is up in that business as they are on Aaron Ramsey and everything around him. It's just like Welbeck is without contract as well, and it just doesn't get mentioned that much. But perhaps it just is like, as you remember, when Walcott perhaps was out of contract and playing for new better contract, perhaps it's the same case with Welbeck now, just giving his best, enjoying, trying to score as much goals as possible and to get the new contract. I mean, I wouldn't mind having a player like that coming off bench and scoring every time he does come off. I mean, that's, no one can complain about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that a fit Danny Welbeck is a useful part of a squad. You know, he isn't a consistent enough finisher for him to be the main man. You know, if he could finish like Aubameyang, then he'd be, you know, a world-class centre-forward, but he can't. But yet, you know, he's the kind of player that, whether defensively or in attacking-wise, is always going to offer a certain amount just because of his pace and physicality and his work rate. And I really hope that we renew his contract. I mean, I've been sort of surprised the whole time that there hasn't really been talk about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that some fans like to laugh at him, but, you know, there's a reason why every England manager, when he's fit, picks him, even if he's not necessarily first choice.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. He keeps getting called up to the national team.
And he's got a decent goal-scoring record for England, and certainly when starting games, has a decent goal-scoring record for Arsenal. So, I would be very keen to retain his services.
It was for him the trying to stay fit and avoid injuries that was the problem over the past few seasons.
I mean, I suppose something else that stood out for me in the Sporting game is that, it was the first we saw Xhaka starting at left back and Lichtsteiner playing at right back after not being very good playing at left back against Leicester City. But it seemed to me a key moment in the game was when Elneny was replaced by Torreira.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to like Elneny, and he seems like a really, really good guy, nice person and everything like that, but it just doesn't go well for him this season so far. Well, I don't think that he brings much creation in the midfield as we would like to.
No, that's the problem with Elneny. He's a willing worker, and he's a great runner, and he can fit in and, you know, do a job.
Yeah,
but it's hard to see how he's going to get many games with unless other people get injuries.
Yeah, well,
just
maybe. Maybe we will get an like we have now a set of injuries at the same position. Perhaps there will be in later this season.
Well, I mean, it seems likely because we get a couple of those every season.
Yeah, exactly. In the same position, more players get injured.
Yeah, and of course it's ironic because he'd just been given a new contract and handed the number 4 shirt by the outgoing Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
For a parting gift.
That's odd.
sort of looking at Sporting, they're a very different proposition to the team that got them into the Europa League, really, given how many players departed after the training ground incident with them last year. Although Gelson Martins hasn't exactly been tearing up trees for Atletico Madrid, but Rui Patricio has been very good in goal for Wolves. And, William Carvalho's not around anymore, although he was sold. So that was a slightly different set of circumstances. And they just looked a little bit toothless, I thought.
Yeah, I think that they ended the match without a shot on target, if I remember correctly.
Wow. And against Arsenal, that's an achievement.
Yeah, and I mean, Ben Leno didn't have much to do, but he did well when he was needed. And I think that perhaps it was our defense that did a lot of work as well. I don't watch Portuguese league, so I don't know if Sporting are usually looking like this against other opponents, but I think that Socrates, who just came back from injury, I didn't expect much from him. I probably didn't expect him to play the whole match because he just came back, but I thought that he was really great. It was great to have him back.
I mean, what did you make of the potential, you know, well, some people were trying to talk it up as a potential red card for Socrates when he grabbed the shirt of the striker, Montero.
Oh yeah, that one he was running in the counter-attack. Well, I'm not sure. I mean, probably if it was the other way around, I would probably call for for a red card.
Mm.
I think that he was lucky.
It was one of those ones, I think, in a way, the striker, because he fell to ground so easily, probably did himself out of getting Socrates sent off. If he'd tried a bit harder to stay on his feet, he probably would have been more successful in getting the referee's sympathy, I think.
Yeah, probably. Makes sense, yeah.
But, I mean, even though Sporting are diminished, I mean, they're still doing okay in the Portuguese league, and wasn't the stat coming out that over the last two and a bit years, the only team to beat them at their ground was Barcelona? Which, you know, puts us in good company. If not necessarily that plausibly. And as I say, we've got, you know, if we manage to beat them at the Emirates in the return fixture, we've got the group sewn up and we can really kind of take the foot off the pedal for the last two fixtures. Which, given some of the difficult league fixtures coming up and the fact that fixtures are coming on more regularly, is no bad thing at all. Yeah, was there any other takeaways you had from the game, really? I mean, I was quite impressed, again, with the performance of Rob Holding.
Yeah. He definitely did well in the defence, looking good. I think that, was it in that match or against Leicester, that call for handball?
I forget now, to be perfectly honest. Is that... Yeah, it was the one where the ball was in the air, wasn't it? And it kind of...
Yeah, I think that it was that he was a bit lucky with that one. But other than that, he was really did really, really well, as he did so far this season, whenever he was called up into play.
Well, it's interesting, doesn't it? Because it now seems that in the other competitions, it's Mustafi and Sokratis who are rotating alongside him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he seems to have really managed to win Emery over. I suppose, given the fitness issues Sokratis has had and the mental frailties that Mustafi's capable of demonstrating, it's hardly surprising, but...
Yeah, it always makes me wonder what would have been if we haven't loaned out Callum Chambers. Would they be playing together in the defence or not?
Well, judging by Callum Chambers' performances for Fulham so far, the answer, I guess, is a no. Isn't it two games he's managed to get given the hook at half-time for being so bad in the first half?
Yeah.
It doesn't inspire confidence, is it? Going forward, although the entire Fulham defence is a mess, so it's not quite the same as to, you know, if you want a more structured, successfully defensive team. But it's not as if Arsenal play a particularly defensive or protected system. Even now, we do have two double pivots in midfield, rather than just expecting Xhaka to cover 50 yards on his own.
Yeah. So
that sort of takes us on to the game against Crystal Palace. I mean, obviously, being given the early kickoff on a Sunday, having just been played away in Europe, was not quite what we'd have hoped for, but it's still, you know, it wasn't a particularly lengthy away trip. I mean, what did you make of the game overall?
Well, you could have noticed that the players have been a little bit tired, if you could say so, from the third match in 7 days. And I thought that this was our worst match since City, probably. It's just... the whole match, it didn't look like we are really, you know, 100% in the match. We did play well, looked well for those, was it 15, 20 minutes in the second half when, as you mentioned, we always expect them to click and start playing in the second half. And yes, that did happen and we got the lead. But I just think that the whole match, it didn't look as it did before. And I think that even Emery made some really not as successful substitutions as he used to do in matches before this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also looking at the substitutions. You know, we were in a situation where the balance was to try and be a little bit more defensive, but without really having defensive experts on the bench beyond just throwing on another centre half. So I can see why he was trying to just bring more legs into the midfield arena to, I suppose, try and catch Palace on the break or at least keep them honest. But I thought Palace played pretty well. I have to say I was quite impressed with them for long periods in the game, particularly those two chances in the first half where Zaha hit the post and then Townsend put one narrowly wide from what was a fantastic move. And... yeah, I thought they were good value for a draw, Palace, actually, despite the fact it was two penalties.
Well, yeah, I mean, the draw is definitely a fair result, and I agree with you that they did look really well and perhaps should have been in the lead earlier in the match and even more by the halftime. But I'm still, you know, used to winning after 11 wins in a row, so this draw doesn't feel as good as it probably should concern when you look at the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Arsenal actually had a couple of good chances in the first half, but unfortunately one fell to Lacazette, who seems to have lost his shooting boots a little in the last couple of weeks, and the other fell to Hector.
Yeah.
Who, like someone who doesn't often find himself in that position, took a bit too long to decide what to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was really frustrated with Lacazette during the whole match. I thought that he was the most not into the match with that miss in the first half and a couple of passes that he just wrong passes for example, for that their second penalty. It wasn't his match at all. And even Iwobi also didn't look up for it, but I mean, he had such a good run lately, so I can forgive him for this one off bad match.
Yeah, I think Iwobi was one of our brighter players in the first half, but yeah, completely disappeared in the second half for me. I mean, not that we had a huge amount of brightness in the first half.
I mean, overall, we created, at least from memory, I think that we created a lot less chances than we used to in the previous Premier League matches. So it just, everything seemed a little bit off, and Mesut Özil wasn't in the match as well. So It was just such a weird match, and, you know, I couldn't wait to get over with it.
I mean, I think we struggled to cope a bit with Palace's physicality in midfield. And by the physicality, I don't mean that they were being dirty and, you know, kicking people around, but they just had a very hard-working and mobile midfield, which meant it was much harder for our players to get time on the ball in positions where they could really make things happen. You know, it was very much a case of playing sort of relatively creative passes from around the halfway line and then being swamped as we got a bit closer to their goal. I mean, I was quite impressed with Palace. I thought tactically they were very good, but I suppose...
Hey, I can tell.
Yeah. But I suppose the goals we conceded came from... they came in a predictable manner, really. You know, before the game, I think if anyone had said that we'd concede from as a result of some disarray after a set piece, and then as a result of Wilfred Zaha getting one-on-one with our makeshift left back, I don't think anyone would have been too surprised.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, were they both penalties for you?
Well. I think yes. It might be controversial, especially for the second one. I think the first one was just really a silly move by Mustafi. It just, what goes through his mind to try and do something like that in the penalty area? It looks crazy. I mean, obviously it wasn't as hard as the player made it look, but it was just still a silly tackle.
Well, he clearly had no idea the guy was there when he decided to go in for that clearance, did he?
Yeah, and perhaps he didn't. I mean, just, he's a defender, he should have a little bit more, I can't remember the word.
Awareness? Awareness?
Awareness, yes.
Composure?
Yes.
Decision making? I mean, all these things are possible.
Yeah, and the second one, I have to agree with Emery on this one. Yes, definitely Zaha used his chance and really dived for it. But I think that it was Xhaka's mistake to give him the opportunity. He shouldn't have left his leg like that out. And even Xhaka, I think he said that he felt Zaha's knee on his knee, so there was some contact there as well. So I just think that it was all pretty much... I would probably blame Lacazette and Mustafi for that much more than Xhaka.
Well, I mean, it was one of those ones that... It was sort of a penalty and a dive at the same time, as you kind of suggest, because... that's one of the reasons why Zaha pisses people off, because he's such a great run of the ball, but he's in a situation there where his entire purpose for doing a trick is not to get past the man, it's to try and get the man to foul him in the area.
Yeah,
and, you can see that. And obviously the fact he starts going down as soon as he sees there's something to throw himself over, rather than trying to get round the player, and it's It doesn't sit well with our Anglo-Saxon sensibilities, I think. But, we all know that players born and raised in England can be just as cheaty as anyone else from anywhere else in the world. There's enough evidence to support that. So,
do you think it was a penalty?
I think it probably was a penalty simply because, you know, if Zaha had been trying to beat Xhaka, he would have been fouled by Xhaka's leg being there. So I think, you know, yeah, I mean, we all know that in that position, Zaha is a dangerous player for most teams. And then if you're someone who's not used to being in that position and don't have the pace or the quickness of feet to deal with a player like Zaha, it's, you know, it's one of the, I'm sort of with you. It's kind of, it's annoying because he should have resisted nibbling, but for the ball, but I mean, he was totally left isolated and exposed, and it was probably the most likely outcome.
Yeah, and Leno was close to stopping that one, but
yeah,
it was just too strong of a shot.
And of course, in the plus column, not a bad goal from Xhaka in the first place, which doesn't hurt in terms of getting detractors away from him.
Yeah, I think that he had a really decent match up until that penalty. Penalty in the close to the end of the match, which was really unlucky for him. But I think that he did well on his very unnatural position, and that goal was just simply amazing, just brilliant how it went in. I think the goalkeeper didn't expect it at all, and it was just going too fast to for him to catch it when he realized where it's going.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really pure strike, wasn't it? And quite apart from that, it was you don't expect someone to shoot in that position, really.
Yeah, it was a little bit on the side.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a quite a hard angle to score from, so respect where it's due, really.
Yeah, the second goal wasn't as pretty.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we have to go straight to the controversy. Do you think Lacazette got a touch with his hand or not? I've seen the replay so many times, I still can't quite work out if he did.
I think that he did get the touch with his hand, but he was definitely fouled by the defender.
Ah, so you're pleading mitigation.
Yeah, I think that perhaps even the referee thought like that and decided to, you know, give the call. It went over the line, and let's move on with our lives.
Spoken like a true fan of the team who scored the goal.
Shocking.
Yeah, funny that. So, which obviously meant that Aubameyang kept up his great goal-scoring record, despite the fact he wasn't that heavily involved in the game. I mean, what did you make of his performance, once again shunted out to the left?
Well, he didn't have as many chances as you already mentioned, but I don't think that it's him to blame. I mean, players, his teammates didn't help him create as many chances at all. As mentioned already, Mesut Ozil was definitely not in the match as you would want him to be. So Aubameyang got this was probably his best chance, and he used it. So what more can we expect?
Yeah, entirely fair. I mean, the guy just scores goals, doesn't he? I mean, his goal scoring record since coming to Arsenal is ludicrous. It's something like a goal every 100 minutes or something. Which, yeah, I mean, it's up there with anyone, isn't it, in terms of goal scoring, and continuing from where he left off with Borussia Dortmund. I mean, his goal scoring record over the last three or four years is just batshit crazy. So yeah, he's got 9 goals in 12 games this season, despite which of course some of them have been as sub.
Yeah.
Last season he got 13 in 16 in the Bundesliga and 10 in 13 in the Premier League, as well as scoring a hat-trick in his only game in the German Cup. In the previous season he got 31 goals in 32 in the league and 7 in 9 in the Champions League. And the season before that, he only got 33 and 41. Actually, call that 36 and 45. So yeah, not quite as impressive. But yeah, his goal scoring record is just extraordinary. And
best proof the Leicester match when he came on, and inside 6-7 minutes he had 2 goals.
Yeah. I mean, for Arsenal, he's got 17 goals in 23 games, but four of them were off the bench.
You so, could, I mean, what can you add? You can't ask for much more unless it's the women's team,
yeah.
Vivian Medema, who has
She's got 11 goals in 6 games.
Yeah, that's just out of this world.
Well, that's, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to talk about the women's team, so we might as well do it now. I don't know, obviously, how many people who listen to this podcast follow the women's team, and without Sylvain as our resident expert, I don't want to go into too much depth, but the Arsenal women's team, having been not really in the title race for the last 4 or 5 years, despite their illustrious history, they're currently played 6, won 6, 31 goals for, 3 goals against, giving them a goal difference in 6 games of plus 28 and a 100% record, which is absolutely mental, obviously. They won 4-0 again away at Bristol City this weekend with, as you said, 2 more goals for Vivian Medema. Previous week they won 6-0 at home against Reading. A week before that they won 5-0 against Chelsea, only 4-3 against West Ham, but then 7-0 away at Yeovil, and 5-0 at home to Liverpool. Their only other games they've played this season are in European competition, where they drew 2-2, which is sort of like a friendly tournament against PSG, beat West Ham in effectively the League Cup, and then 3-1, and beat Lewis, who I didn't even know had a ladies team, 9-0. So they're just scoring goals at a ridiculous rate, and have only conceded goals in one of those games. So yeah, in 5 of those fixtures, they've not conceded at all, and would have a goal difference of plus 27 in 5 league games. And given that they've played 3 of the top half of the table.
If I recall correctly, there is a big difference between first 2 teams and then 3rd, 4th and 5th.
Well, Arsenal have got 18 points, 6 games. Man City's women have got 15 points from 7 games. And then Birmingham have got 13 points from 6 games. Mm-hmm. Birmingham seem to basically not let any goals. They've managed to win 4 games and only... win 4 games and draw a 5th, having only scored 6 goals all season.
Lame.
Which is good. I mean, it shows that defensively they must be super sound. I mean, it also means that, yeah, they haven't won any games by more than a goal, I think. But anyway, and then it starts to drop off there with Chelsea women, who obviously have always been strong for a long time, already 8 points behind Arsenal, having played a game more. And Liverpool's women 9 points. So it's basically Arsenal and Man City fighting it out at this stage. That's quite exciting, given what a great turnaround it was with Joe Montemurro, the new manager, coming in and suddenly turning it round from a situation which wasn't very happy or convincing, and now they're just stuffing the entire league, and as long as they don't lose twice to Man City, then they've got a good chance of winning the Women's League, which is rather exciting. How are you feeling about the aftermath of the Palace game? I mean, obviously it was points dropped and it was the end of the winning run. I'm sort of inclined to say that it's all the kind of game we might have lost last season, but I don't know if that's true. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I've seen so many comments saying the same as you did right now. it might sound a bit bad or something, that like I'm enjoying this, but I was thinking it might be too good to drop these 2 points before the big one on the weekend against Liverpool, because we were obviously playing high, even though we didn't look really good on the pitch, but we got the wins and always scored at least 2 goals per match. It was all looking really, really good for us. And now this happened against Palace, and you could see that Emery was pissed at the touchline and yelling at, was it Lacazette or who? And his comments after the match, you could see that he definitely knows that there still has to be some work done, especially defensively. So I think that this result will positively influence the further development of this Emery team?
Well, I think certainly it's no harm to get a kick up the arse just before the Liverpool game this weekend, which is obviously going to be a real challenge. I mean, they haven't really hit their straps fully, but, you know, Salah started scoring again now, just in time for our fixture against them. And of course,
yeah, I mean, in that one we definitely can't afford waiting for the second half, because it will probably be 3-0 or 4-0 up until the second half.
But I mean, crucially, it does seem as though we'll have some left backs. Yeah, for that game, so Granit Xhaka can go back to playing in midfield and help adding control. I mean, Guendouzi, again, very good passing range, but he doesn't yet seem, despite having a lot of talent and being a massive prospect, clearly, as he shows us every time we see him, he doesn't seem to have the capacity to control the tempo to quite the same degree as Xhaka. I mean, I don't know what you think, but do you agree with that, or...?
Yeah, I agree. I still go with my ideal pairing in the midfield would be Xhaka and Torreira.
Mm. I mean, what would your starting 11 be for the Liverpool game? Assuming Hector's fit, which of course he may not be, but
yeah, it's still unclear about his injury.
Yeah,
probably be working hard to get into that, I think.
As his social media accounts say, yes.
I mean, Lichtsteiner, he's not as bad, but he's not Hector Bellerin. I'm not really sure about the defense. Not sure how ready Sokratis is. Perhaps have him and Rob Holding in the defense. I wish that we keep Ben Leno at the goal. Czech was ready for Palace, but was not playing. And I hope that Emery will keep sticking with Leno, because I think that he did really well so far.
Well, he seems to crucially allow us to get away with playing a higher line. And I think against Liverpool, having a goalkeeper that's going to be able to come off their line effectively might be really, really important, given that they're, you know, alarming pace they have on the break. And, you know, their entire model is set up to, you know, you try and get people in between the centre half and the full backs and beyond the back line. So having a goalkeeper that's going to come off is pretty important. I mean, I suppose you'd expect the team to sort of pick itself in terms of its. I mean, I get the impression that Iwobi is higher up in the manager's thinking than Mkhitaryan, partly because of his physicality.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I wasn't really impressed that much with Mkhitaryan in Lisbon.
I mean, I suppose it depends on whether Emery tactically wants to go for something a bit more solid than a front three of Lacazette, Aubameyang and Iwobi. And maybe have more midfielders or more potential midfielders in there. You know, maybe even a game where Aubameyang goes back to centre forward and Laka drops to the bench. I don't know.
Yeah, it will be an interesting one. Do you think he will give one more chance to Ramsey?
Well, I mean, I think if he's going to make that tactical change, then Ramsey's as good a bet as any to come in and benefit from that. You know, he always offers a goal threat, and of course his record against Liverpool down the years is pretty good, particularly at the Emirates Stadium. He scored a few goals against them down the years. But yeah, it really depends on whether Emery wants to try and go for goals, or whether he wants to try and control the game a bit more. And yeah, it's sort of we don't yet know what his patterns are, do we? I mean,
I think that he will perhaps go with something like against Leicester, but drop Lacazette and play Aubameyang up front.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. I mean, yeah, this is one of the excitements of the new era, isn't it? I mean, we actually have to say we would just have to wait and see.
yeah, that we definitely skipped the League Cup match in between.
Well, I was going to ask you about that next, actually. I mean, I don't know quite what to ask, because obviously there's going to be massive rotation. You'd expect some senior players and then some kids. No disrespect to Blackpool, but we are at home, and that's a big difference when you're playing, wanting to play younger games in the League Cup. Mm-hmm. And Blackpool aren't as good as the Brentford team that we played in the last round, even though their form since that game has dropped off significantly, partly because they've lost their manager, because he went to manage his boyhood team, Aston Villa. So, I mean, you'd have to hope that it's a game where we might see Maitland-Niles now he's back from injury. I mean, I really hope that Eddie Nketiah at least gets some game time, because he's not had any opportunities this season.
Definitely.
Smith Rowe is almost certain to get some game time if he's fit. And then it'd be interesting to see who beyond that the manager rates out of the younger players, because again, we don't have those set patterns there either. I'm looking forward to it though. Should be quite interesting.
Empty stadium though, but
well, you know, it's still going to be more fans that normally watch the under-23s play.
Real fans.
Yeah, or you know, tourists who can't get tickets for the normal games.
Yeah.
I personally don't think there's anything to it, but what did you make of Ozil's reaction at being substituted against Palace and Emery's subsequent comments about it?
I thought that it was just a normal reaction when a player is subbed off and he would like to continue and play more, try to get more from out of the match. I think that they are making something out of nothing.
What's it, that? Well, that's, you know, yeah. not a massive surprise given it's that they've got to sell newspapers. We don't make any money from this, listeners, so we can afford to be less sensationalist and just give you facts.
I agree with what Emery said at the press conference.
Yeah. Looking elsewhere, because obviously trying to predict not only the games coming up is very difficult, and we don't yet know who's going to be available for them. Well, certainly the Liverpool game, and of course Blackpool, we don't know who the manager is going to play, but I guess we both predict a win in that one.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's been some other news. A certain Mr. Robin van Persie has announced his retirement, or his upcoming retirement. I mean, do you think he'll ever be welcome at Arsenal again?
No.
Because, Frank Stapleton has never been welcomed back, although most of the other players that have left the club have been welcomed with open arms.
I think most of the fans are grateful for his goals when he was around, but the way he left and everything after, it just, no thank you.
I mean, without wishing to dig up old bones, I think that in a way was the hardest one to take out of all the departures in the last 20 odd years, because of the way it happened. Having, you know, waited so long for him to reach his peak, and support him through injuries and accusations, all kinds of nasty things, and disciplinary issues and what have you. And it just so happened that happened just as his contract was expiring, and it became clear the team probably wasn't going to win anything.
So, yeah, it was. We stuck with you through all the injuries and everything on and off the pitch, and the first chance you get, you are off.
Well, it was the "Hey guys" statement, wasn't it? That was the real fuck you moment.
Don't like the direction the club is going. Oh.
Well, you know, we don't either, but we're where are we going to go? Yeah, exactly. But just speaking of others that left and have had sometimes difficult relationships, but what did you make of Fabregas sort of implying that if Arsenal wanted him when his contract runs out, he'd be up for it?
Well...
Because I know that you were a great Fabregas lover, weren't you, back in the day?
Yeah, I was. That's the good past tense.
Yeah.
I'm really not sure. I don't think that he would bring us anything more now as a player. And I have no idea how he is as perhaps a coach or manager or something like that. I think that he's working on that, on getting some those coaching badges or something.
Yeah, I think he's made it clear that he'd like to get into coaching later on. So I'd be surprised if he wasn't looking to progress in that area.
I think that he had what really often happened, regrets for leaving Arsenal, and when your career isn't as going as good as you hoped for, and he just, you know, I feel like he's using every chance he can to say something nice about Arsenal and how he wants to come back and how he still loves the club and everything like that. It just, I don't buy it.
What, once bitten, twice shy, yeah? I mean, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, City just scored against Tottenham.
Oh, well. That's quite funny.
On the rugby pitch.
You see, I haven't got the game on, so and my BBC feed is running behind, so I'll have to take your word for it. But obviously, by the time you're listening to this, listeners, you'll know the final score. But it looks at the moment like it might be something we could all live with.
Yeah, it would still keep us above Tottenham, and that's the only thing that matters this season. Well,
we're not going to be finishing ahead of City this season unless you know they have a massive meltdown.
Yeah, can't see that happening.
The only other thing I wanted to bring up this season was, or bring up this evening rather, is the form of Reece Nelson on loan at Hoffenheim. Have you had a chance to see any of his impact?
Yeah, I have seen. I think I've watched one match, but I've been following Hoffenheim for a while now because of Andrej Kramaric and his position there. And yeah, Nelson was like, what, 3 goals now?
4.
4. Yeah, really.
I don't know if he is after the weekend, but I know before the weekend's game he was their top scorer this season.
Yeah, I haven't looked at
despite the fact he's only started a couple of games and hasn't played that much.
Yeah, he seems to enjoy it up there, and it seems like a good team with the young manager Nagelsmann and good atmosphere around the team. I'm a bit disappointed in their form in Champions League. I expected a bit more, but in the Bundesliga they look okay so far.
Well, Nelson also got another assist this weekend. A lovely bit of skill where he beat 3 players in the box before shooting, which the goalkeeper saved, and then someone else smashed in the rebound from close range. So, you know, if he can keep contributing no matter how, it just, you know, adds more and more value to that. And we've had so many poor loan spells for young players from Arsenal in recent years. You know, thinking of Serge Gnabry going to Pulis land and never not getting a game. So it's good to see someone being in a situation where they're being given the opportunity to flourish, and also that they're taking that opportunity. I mean, I think the last loan spell we had that was genuinely positive, it was probably Ainsley Maitland-Niles when he went to Ipswich as a 17-year-old. And even then, that sort of ended in acrimony because his mum had a massive row with Mick McCarthy. Anyway, we're not going to get into that can of worms.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much else going on in Arsenal world. Obviously, the transfer window's closed, so there's a limit to what we're going to be linked in terms of ins and outs. Everyone and anyone in Europe is getting linked with Aaron Ramsey, everyone from Juventus to Valencia to Chelsea, so we shall see. What did you think of him coming out this week and saying, no one's told me anything?
It's just, you know, one more thing to add to this whole mess of a situation where I'm not really sure what exactly happened, how it happened, but judging by his performances so far this season, I think that perhaps it was a good decision in the end.
Well, I suppose we don't even know how much money he was asking for. There's only rumours. I mean, the one piece of gossip that won't die is that apparently Barcelona can't make up their mind whether they want to keep Ousmane Dembélé or not. there's rumours that he's sort of turning up late to training and things. he might yet become available on loan in January, which would be a decent loan signing, give us a boost because we don't have a lot of natural width in the squad. And the other thing is also equally their new signing Malcolm, who we tried to buy from Bordeaux, has barely seen any game time at all. So he might be an option on loan or to buy in January, despite the fact that there isn't a lot of money in the bank and the powers that be tell us that they don't really believe in the January transfer window. But I think it is clear that while it might not be our greatest position of need, we don't really have a genuine wide man in the squad. Unless you think Iwobi is a genuine wide player. And Reece Nelson, it's not yet clear if he's actually a winger or more of an attacking midfielder in terms of a final position. So, you know, it wouldn't do us any harm to get someone at least on loan in January and boost those numbers towards the end of the season.
Definitely.
Unless you've got anything, I've got nothing else to add this week. I don't think there's much else to say. My ailing mouth has been giving me jip, so I think I can't really talk for much longer. So with that in mind, listeners, I'm just going to wrap it up here. Sorry, but I'm in pain, so you'd have been lucky to get this much. So with that in mind, have a great week, everyone. For those of you going to the Blackpool game, do enjoy it. For those of you going to the Liverpool game, enjoy that more. And let's hope that we've got some nice positive things to talk about next week, when hopefully my face will be more, functional. Right then, well, thanks again, Anita. Lovely to have you on as always, and we'll speak to you very soon.
Yeah, bye.
Cheerio.